And welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by Kartik Krishnayar. We're going to talk about watching soccer from around the world. This past week, Kartik, gosh, there's been what? Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana, UEFA Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League, lots of games to go through. Was there anything that jumped out at you? I mean, it doesn't have to be the Champions League or the kind of the similar tournaments that they have, but anything that jumped out at you this last week that you thought was really interesting or different?
Not really, no. I think it was just very, very interesting to have several games on broadcast television, right? To have NWSL, Bundesliga, and Premier League all on within a couple hours of each other on what we used to consider the three major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS. So that was a major win for the sport. And CBS is showing so much coverage of NWSL and the NWSL Challenge Cup between CBS Sports Network, obviously Paramount Plus having the other games, and CBS over the air. It's been really, really good to watch. By the way, there are some matches in the NWSL regular season, not many, but a few that will be on Twitch, I've found out.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
On that note.
That's right. Yep, for free. So, like, for me personally, we both of us, and I'm sure the listeners, watch so much soccer from around the world that it's almost impossible for us to talk about everything, because you, Kartik, as one example, probably watch more championship games than anyone I know. You know what I mean? I try to dabble and watch the things that I'm interested in, and as do you, and as does the listener, right? There's so much soccer on television, it's impossible to cover everything. It's impossible to watch everything. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be that, you mean, every weekend, most of America pretty much watched the same games. There was a game on Fox Soccer Channel on a Saturday morning. Maybe there was a couple of choices around about lunchtime. And then afternoon, it was an MLS game, and sometimes that was pretty much the only game that was on other than reruns. And maybe on a Saturday night, there'd be a Liga MX game or Liga MX game, so on and so forth. I think in many ways, I mean, going back to what you said before, too, about, we've got a lot of games on over-the-air networks, CBS, ABC, Fox, etc. It's good when those games are on those big television networks. I mean, we looked at last weekend's numbers for the viewing numbers for the major games. This is not everything, but if you added up all the games from the Premier League and from MLS that were on big-time national TV networks or cable stations, as well as the Bundesliga, of course, on the English language side, there were more than 4 million people that watched those games, or 4 million viewers. So it is big numbers, but it is hard. It's harder now, I think, than ever to really kind of have a conversation with soccer fans, because our interests are so different.
Yeah. No, and I think what I'm finding is that there are people who say, if you're not watching Serie A, then you're not watching football, or if you're not watching this, or basically there's more tribalization with more matches on, and people who are becoming very judgmental about people who watch other things, which I'm not personally enjoying. Right? We can have debates about leagues and quality of play and styles of play. And whether watching a Pep versus Klopp match is too robotic, I've heard that also. That they're two tactical geeks. Why would I watch that when I can watch something free flowing from somewhere else, more free flowing? I'd argue that that's a fallacy, but whatever. I think you would too. But there's more tribalization now, so even my conversations with soccer fans are evolving, and I don't think it's really in a good way, to be honest with you. People are becoming much more tribal and particular about their leagues or the styles of play they like.
Yeah, I think the soccer, the cooler conversation, the water cooler conversation, like where people talk about, like, hey, you mean in the old world, right? When we didn't all work remotely, or many of us, is that the water cooler conversation would be the morning after, like, hey, did you see that game last night? What game was that? Oh, it was the CONCACAF Champions League semi-final, first leg, you mean, great game, and Seattle did really, really well to come back. That person might say, nope, it was too late. I was watching the Champions League, you mean, UEFA Champions League, and I saw, you mean, Liverpool against Villarreal. Or maybe it's somebody who says, like, hey, no, I didn't see any of those. I watched Serie A. It is in some ways, it's funny, Kartik, because in some ways, Don Garber many years ago, probably about 5 years ago, said, there's too much soccer on television. He said this at a conference. In a way, we ridiculed him at the time, but in a way, he's right, because it's harder to get everyone together on the same page now than ever before. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there was seemed to be a lot more U.S. men's national team fans that were like, hey, let's get around this team. This is a team that we can believe in, and we'll watch some MLS games on ESPN. The numbers were much greater back then than they are now. And, yeah, we'll watch a Liverpool-Man City game on a Saturday morning. The quality is not the greatest, but look at the atmosphere, the crowds. In some ways, was Don Garber right? And it's weird. It seems to be, despite all of the options available to watch soccer from around the world, it's great. But sometimes it does feel a little bit lonely because we're all watching so many different things.
Yeah, totally. And I think that I'm finding even on Twitter, if I talk about certain subjects, I'm getting less interaction than I used to. I mean, people are watching different things. And I think there is the thing that and that's perfectly fine. That's great. And I think this sport, unlike many American sports, has a real diversity in culture, diversity in style of play, diversity in fans. That maybe you don't quite see in terms of their viewpoints and their worldviews and their kind of culture in American sports. What I do mind is the growing view that, well, if you're watching this league, that's crap, or you're watching that league, that's not, you don't really understand football. And there seems to be among look, maybe I'm a bit of a hypocrite, but our views evolve over time, right? Because I've criticized people who only watched the Premier League in the past, right? On this show, very, very openly. There now seems to be a backlash against people who are watching primarily the Premier League among a lot of other football fans in the U.S., saying, well, they don't really know anything about anything else, and they don't really understand football because they're only watching that league. And then a lot of those people resort to wild stereotypes about the Premier League because they're not actually watching the Premier League. So they'll take some dated 1980s or 1990s view of English football and extrapolate it to 2022, which the Premier League has more tactical diversity than any top-flight league in the world right now in terms of the different way managers approach the way they play. I think there's a general uniformity in Germany. There's a little more diversity in Italy and Spain, but not quite at the level of the Premier League. And certainly no other league has the spending power or the ability to attract top coaches to clubs that aren't the top two or three in the league that the Premier League has. So I think there's just this huge kind of this divide that's opened up. And maybe this goes back to broadcast, right? The Premier League is exclusively on NBC. NBC doesn't show any other soccer at all. So, I mean, I guess maybe that has something to do with it, because if you are a viewer of one of those other leagues and it's on ESPN or on CBS, just as two examples, you're probably more prone to say, oh, yeah, they're showing an ad for this on Paramount Plus. Maybe I'll check out the Brasileiro. I'll check out Serie A. Whereas if you're on watching the Premier League, you're not checking anything else out because NBC isn't advertising anything else. I don't know. Maybe I'm spitballing here about the broadcast implications of this, but there's a definite a drift towards this, Chris, that I'm finding, and I think is really kind of unhealthy, honestly, as we try and sustain soccer in this country. Because remember, we're still a minority sport in this country. I don't think we need to be fighting amongst one another and calling other people out for not being as cultured, quote-unquote, as maybe you are.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that call us out, Kartik, even in the comments section sometimes for World Soccer Talk, that says like, hey, you're not watching the Belgian league, you're not watching the Dutch league, or you mean, and those are good leagues too. And from time to time, I will tune in and watch even a PSV game or Feyenoord game or Ajax game, and it's entertaining, but I don't have the time to watch everything.
Okay, so Chris, specifically fans of the Dutch league are one of the groups I'm calling out. I didn't name names, but there are multiple fans of the Dutch league who call me out both privately and publicly for not watching that league, and that how can I possibly make these assumptions about things if I'm not watching that league? Well, unfortunately, those matches overlap with, I mean, and I watch a few games, right? I've even tweeted at times, hey, I checked out PSV and Feyenoord. It was a great match, but I'm not consistently watching the league, is correct. So yeah, am I missing stuff because I'm not watching that league consistently? Sure. But that doesn't mean your opinion or my opinion or someone else's opinion is less valid. And even if it is less valid in your mind, let's try and keep this thing together, because our sport's not big enough in this country. It's not American football, where I think if they divided in 10 different ways, they'd still be fine, yeah. Right? I don't think we can afford to do that as a sport in this country.
Well, it's difficult, though, Kartik, too, because if you look at all of the top sports in the United States, and we had an article at worldsoccertalk.com, probably about 3 or 4 months ago, that said, finally, we now have the proof and stats and evidence to say that soccer is a bigger sport than NHL in this country. So, NFL, American football, you've got basketball, you got baseball, and then you've got soccer, and then you've got hockey. So that's a big deal. But if you talk to people on the street or in your office or just in your family, they'll say like, yeah, no, soccer's still this very kind of, yeah, it's growing among the kids, and how many people are playing it isn't that great. But it doesn't still have that kind of same, like, kind of big sports feel. However, it does. And it does because the numbers are there. It doesn't because there are so many leagues to watch and so many options, so many languages, that it is so spread across all these leagues from around the world, which is wonderful. But at the end of the day, too, I think that water cooler conversation, what's happening is that conversation's at the water cooler. It's mostly now about the Premier League, and I think that's part of it too, is the Premier League has gotten so big in this country that it is a water cooler conversation. When I go traveling and I'm in a hotel or in a lobby of a hotel on a morning, a Saturday morning, and I'm getting some breakfast, the TVs are on, you mean that they're showing Premier League games, and there's a whole bunch of kids and families sitting down watching it and intently. You can tell that they watch this, they're interested in this. And you may have a better league, such as in some ways the Bundesliga, in terms of the way that the league is run. Yes, forget about Bayern. If Bayern wasn't in the Bundesliga, it would be a totally different story. But the way that the league's run, the way it's produced, the way the level of football, the chances for young players, the entertainment value, you could argue easily that the Bundesliga in many ways is just as good as the Premier League, maybe not as better, or maybe it is better, but is nowhere even in the same stratosphere as the Premier League. And I think in some ways too, the big leagues that have that water cooler conversation opportunities seem to be getting bigger and bigger. The smaller leagues, and when I say smaller, just smaller in comparison, are having a tough time. We've seen that from MLS viewership, that there's relatively not many people talking about it. The CONCACAF Champions League, this is an opportunity for MLS. This is a big opportunity for MLS to get some credibility and to get into that conversation. It's not there yet. Perhaps next week, if Seattle defeats Pumas, maybe that'll happen, but still got a long way to go. It's just a weird place that we're in, Kartik, where I think in some ways we're in the golden era of soccer TV coverage in this country. We've got so many options, so much shoulder programming. You mean just before, post-match, pre-match, some of the biggest names in world football covering the game. But we're still mostly concentrating on those big events.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's something that fans have to recognize and be more tolerant of. So it's the Dutch league. It's funny you mentioned that. Maybe it's not funny because you're getting the same comments I am. That seems to be one of the bones of contention, that somehow if you're not watching, in particular PSV and Ajax, you're not watching football. And there are multiple people who tell me that, right, and get on
well,
me about
well,
it.
So, Alexi Lalas said the same thing several years ago, saying, like, hey, if you're not watching MLS, are you even a soccer fan?
Yeah, yeah. He said, "Are you an American soccer fan?" Which rankled me because I said, "Well, I'm working NASL. I watch USL. I go to public parks to watch NPSL and UPSL games. That's the grassroots soccer in my area. But I'm not I was watching MLS more at that point. But still, let's say I wasn't watching MLS. Does that mean doing all those other things, I'm not a soccer fan?" And this is a similar conversation, right? I think there are people. Look, I think it comes down to this. Irrespective of the broadcast situation here with NBC having the Premier League and everything else being on CBS, ESPN, or somewhere else, right? The bottom line is there is a growing resentment among fans of other European leagues about the Premier League's hegemony, right? Which is a financial hegemony for the last 10 years or so, which has now turned into a clear supremacy in terms of quality of the league, which we weren't sure would happen, right? Because money doesn't necessarily translate. And I would say for of that 10-year period we're talking about, where the Premier League has had a superior TV deal, superior visibility, and superior commercial deals, I would say a good chunk of that time La Liga was still a better league top to bottom, in my opinion. But now, I don't think there's a conversation as to what the best league is when you get past the top few teams. You can argue Real Madrid is better than Liverpool or Manchester City. You can argue PSG is better than them. They haven't proved it this year, but you could argue that, right? You could argue Bayern's better than all these clubs, even though Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, even though obviously they bombed out of Champions League this year. You cannot argue 1 through 15 what the best league is, right? Yeah, like in the yeah. world,
but also you look at the UEFA Champions League.
No other league would there be a club like Everton who has spent £500 billion on players to be in this situation. I said 500 billion. Sorry, 500 million in transfer fees in the last few years, and be in the relegation zone.
Yeah, you look at the domination in the Champions League in terms of the number of British clubs there. You look at Europa League in the semifinals. How many British clubs are there? It's. I mean, they may not even win the either tournaments, but it is a domination for 2 years in a row.
Yeah, it is. And I don't look, those competitions are one and two off competitions. I don't really like to look at them as a judge. And I've argued that in the past too. I mean, even in defense of England, when English teams were doing very poorly in Europe, there was one year where English teams were out by the round of 16, every round English team. There was a year where Man City won the title and they finished third in their Champions League group and ended up in Europa League. So that ebbs and flows, but I think if you look at really the quality of play, the depth of quality players, the depth of quality coaches, the ability of clubs like Brighton to sustain themselves playing incredible football, Southampton you mentioned last week, also those clubs further down the table, you don't see as much of that in other leagues. And so my point is, I think, Chris, there's a growing resentment. I sense that. There's a growing resentment of the money going to the Premier League. There's a growing resentment of their commercial deals. There's always been a little bit of a snickering of so-called more cosmopolitan football fans towards England in general, and Englishness and I would call it, they have a bit of Anglophobia in a way, but towards the British pundit and the British coaches, which I think in many cases has been very justified, by the way. I'm not saying I disagree with it, but now that the Premier League is clearly in the ascendancy and everyone else is playing second fiddle, and I don't think there's any question about this, okay? Even if Real Madrid wins the Champions League, like I said, Bayern could win the Champions League next year and PSG the year after. It just means that the top team is better. It doesn't mean the league as a whole is better. And I think that that resentment now is fostering itself in all these different ways. Oh, if you don't watch Serie A, I had someone tell me this a few weeks ago. If you don't watch Serie A, you're not watching football. And I said, well, I do watch Serie A, but there are a lot of people who don't, and I think are perfectly qualified to discuss the sport and understand the sport at a level maybe higher than I do. The number of people who've said it about the Dutch league is pretty telling as well.
Yeah, I think for me, in my circles, it isn't resentment that I'm seeing. It's more about feeling that almost resigned to the fact that there's no way to keep up with the Premier League, that our league, whatever that league is never going to be as big as that league. And it is what it is, type of thing where it's like, hey, we've almost given up here at this point, where it's like there's no way to battle that. But the leagues have to battle that, and that's the thing though too. It is definitely slanted in one direction in terms of the way the Premier League is operating, from a, you mean just the way that the league is run, and the marketing and the production and everything that goes into it in terms of the players and on the pitch, of course, absolutely. The relegation battle, which this year, again, yet again, I mean, the relegation battle, that's the thing that year after year, even when the title race is well and truly over, the relegation battle, almost every year, Carter, keeps us just sucked into that. It's like, it's to me, in many ways, it's sometimes more captivating than the title race, which sounds crazy, but it's true, because you mean the title race, sometimes it's usually just one or two teams just trying to win it, sometimes even one team just like flying away with it. The relegation, usually there's usually 4 to 5 teams battling it out all the way to the end, and the fact that one of those teams, or well, 3 teams go down, but usually it's 1 or 2 teams that are kind of in that jeopardy zone, that to me is enthralling. And again, too, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Sometimes I'm like, I'm watching the Burnley games more intently than whatever other games on at the same time. The same thing happened this past weekend, too. I was just glued to Burnley, just watching them.
There's nothing, in my view, and again, I'm biased. We all have our personal perspectives. There is nothing in my view that's more momentous right now going on in world football. And I know Liverpool is probably going to be in the Champions League final. Man City or Real Madrid will be there. We have Seattle potentially, with that penalty last night, potentially setting themselves up to win the CONCACAF Champions League. We have Milan winning potentially their first Serie A title in over a decade. Nothing is more momentous than the idea of Everton dropping to the championship. Not only are Everton a huge club, and I know there are people who come back to me saying, well, Newcastle got relegated, West Ham got relegated, Aston Villa got relegated, Leeds got relegated. Yeah, all true. There has never been a club that has spent this amount of money, okay? And when they started spending, they were consistently finishing in the top half of the table in the Premier League. Chris, the year before Mushiri bought the club, they finished 7th. And they were in Europe. There has never been a club that I can remember that has spent this amount of money to go from 7th to 18th, potentially, and then get relegated. And again, I think most of you know, Everton have the longest most number of seasons in the English top flight. They have the longest consecutive run in the top flight behind Arsenal, who have not been relegated since the 19-teens, Arsenal. Everton have not been relegated since they were promoted back to the first division in 1955. So, to me, that's the biggest story in football, which is why I'm watching Burnley games intently like you are. I understand and respect that other people think that we're crazy. There's another person who told me, you couldn't pay me to watch Everton. I can't believe, you know, you fancy yourself as a big football analyst and you're sitting focused on Everton and Burnley. Okay, that's fine. Then don't pay attention to me. Maybe my analysis of Real Madrid or Bayern is off because I'm watching Everton instead. But that, to me, is such a story, and like you, I'm focused on that.
The other thing that spreads the kind of popularity of soccer wider and wider, spreads it in a way that basically we're all watching different things, so it's hard to kind of get those large numbers, because, you mean, collectively, all together, there are large numbers watching soccer, but on a game-by-game basis, those numbers may not seem to be as big as what they should be. But again, collectively they are. But the other part of that is women's soccer. Women's soccer is growing in popularity. Anyone who's watched the UEFA Women's Champions League this season or last season, it's entertaining. It's packed crowds. It's with DAZN and YouTube, kind of that free stream, and at a football showing these games. It's good content. And you look at any weekend now, of football from around the world available to us in the United States, a lot of those games are women's games too. And there's a large community watching those games that, you know, maybe they watch some men's games in combination with women's games, or there's some that watch just women's football. We've seen that from CBS this past weekend, Kartik, North Carolina against Washington. The viewing number for that on CBS was greater than the viewing number, MLS's best number that weekend.
Yeah, and key thing here is that the club game in women's football, which was not relevant on a mass scale until very recently, has become relevant. So relevant that this morning, Soccer America published an interview with Anson Dorrance, who I think everybody knows, right? Former U.S. women's national team coach, longtime Titan at North Carolina. I would, as a Floridian, mention that Florida State under Mark Kerkorian, who just retired a few weeks ago, has won more ACC championships than North Carolina and more national championships than North Carolina in the last decade. But that's my own personal stand as a Floridian. Anson Dorrance, who has trashed the club game for years, women's club game. Oh, every girl needs to be going to college. What matters is them coming to UNC Chapel Hill. And we know UNC Chapel Hill has really been the incubator for the U.S. women's national team and for some other women's national teams. We've seen Dutch players, et cetera, play at UNC, and we've seen players from many European nations and South American nations play at various and Asian nations play at various U.S. college programs. Anson Dorrance today in a Soccer America interview admitted, yeah, you know what? The club game is relevant. Finally, after all these years of poo-pooing it. So that, to me, is verification of what you just said, Chris. The growing footprint of the women's club game with WSL, which will be on CBS next year. And CBS Sports Network, I'm told, has plans to show several matches. And we've seen, actually, NBC do okay with the property via At the Football. And then clearly CBS is getting really good numbers for NWSL when they show it on the main network. We don't know the numbers on CBS Sports Network. I would caution the listeners about that, right? They're not Nielsen rated, so we don't know what numbers those are doing. But when they show it on big CBS, it's doing really, really well. And kind of showing up MLS in some ways, as you indicated.
Yeah, I mean, from personal experience, so I went to one of my daughter's soccer games last weekend. So she's a teenager. She's playing rec soccer. She loves it. She really enjoys playing the sport. And she's pretty decent. Not a bad defender. But talking to some of the parents there, the soccer moms, they're coming up to me saying, like, hey, Chris, did you watch that game this weekend? The North Carolina against Washington on CBS. Did you see that goal they scored? Blah, blah, blah. And to me, it's interesting hearing that, listening to that, because I'm like, yeah, I caught the game. I watched it. Yeah, it was a good game. Yeah, entertaining. But I think a lot of soccer moms and parents, of course, and young girls and men, and of course, too, are appealing to that because it is something that they can relate to. It's American teams. A lot of these young girls or even women in general have aspirations to be a professional athlete. Even if they don't have any aspirations, it's someone they can look up to and watch these games and relate to a lot better than watching, say, to men's soccer. But Kartik, I have to ask you this question. Out of all the sports in this country, right, and tons of sports, is there any sport that has a viewership or kind of that is as split as soccer when you look at all the leagues, all the teams, all the types of opportunities to watch that sport of soccer? Is there any other sport that comes close to that?
Not that I know of. I mean, I think college sports, there's a lot of splits via conference, right? There's splits between people who watch the SEC exclusively and watch the ACC exclusively or watch the Pac-12. I think the most notable thing would be West Coast fans in college sports watch the Pac-12 and don't tend to watch as much of everything else. I'm trying to think. Maybe lacrosse, maybe auto racing is split for sure. But I don't think it quite has the number of splits as soccer does. Golf certainly has some splits. That's about to get potentially more intense. If those of you out there, I'm sure, have been following the news this week about this this rogue tour that Greg Norman's the commissioner of and has Saudi money behind it. That's going to try and challenge the PGA Tour. Now, there's all obviously always been the PGA European Tour and the Asian Tour and the Australasian Tour, but that split might intensify now. And I actually, as someone who's followed golf, not as closely as I've followed football, obviously, but who's followed golf through the years, the split between the main PGA Tour and the European PGA Tour was always kind of, you know, you had to keep an eye on both. And I would chastise Americans who would only watch the U.S. PGA Tour and wouldn't watch or at least keep track of what was going on the European Tour. So there's always been a split in that sport, but not quite like this. I don't think there's a sport that has quite the split like this. And then the women's professional game becoming more and more relevant furthers the split, because I think what the argument other fans of golf and tennis in particular would make is that you would have to keep up with the WTA tour on the women's side in tennis and the women's LPGA tour on the women's side in golf also to be well-rounded in the sport, and I agree on that. And will admit my golf viewing tended to gravitate towards men, not my tennis viewing. My tennis viewing, I don't watch much tennis anymore, but when I did, I probably watched more women's tennis than men's tennis. So I think that it's getting further and further fragmented and stratified at this point.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things, though, too, that, like, for example, here at worldsoccertalk.com, one of our specialties is all the TV schedules and streaming schedules. So we're probably more intimate with all the games that are going on. Any given Saturday, easily, there's more than 70 games going on. How do we know this? Because we're the ones researching all the games, finding out who's broadcasting them, and then updating all the schedules by hand. This is not like kind of a feed that we get from some larger entity. This is all done by hand. So we have a team of people that update this across the website and the app, etc. And in a given year, there's at least 5,000 soccer games that go on in this country that are available to us via streaming and television combined, at least. You mean we're in our system where we're kind of adding the different teams and the different games. There's over 1,000 teams that we have in there. So, and it's interesting too, because we have a newsletter that's free, email newsletter, and in there it asks you, okay, what's your favorite team? What's your favorite league? So we have a master spreadsheet of all the different teams that people support. And it's incredible how diverse that is, because based on kind of which is your favorite team, you'll get a newsletter that's personalized to you based on that. And it's crazy the number of teams and just the wide array from around the world that we see there that are the favorite teams, which is wonderful, which is incredible. Having said all of that, Kartik, looking ahead to this weekend's matches, what's the game that you recommend that we should watch and I'll share mine?
So I guess we're going back to kind of form here, reverting to form. Milan Fiorentina, 9 a.m. Eastern on Sunday, which is listed on CBS Sports Network, which I was pleasantly surprised by, and Paramount Plus. Milan now, after Inter's faux pas midweek, defensive faux pas, is now in control of their own destiny in terms of winning Serie A. Inter still has goal difference, but now Milan 2 points clear with 5 match days to go. This Fiorentina match represents a potential slip-up, a potential for Milan to be tripped up. And Milan has not only won a Serie A title since 2011 under Max Allegri, but has spent much of that time out of the Champions League places. In fact, some of those years out of the Europa League places. So this isn't vintage Milan. This is quite a comeback story these last two seasons.
So the game that checks off all the boxes for me, Kartik, has to be, and again, this is very predictable in many ways, but it's true. This is my honest, my match to watch this weekend. Leeds United against Manchester City, Saturday, 12:30 Eastern, NBC, I think Universo and Peacock. Why does this check the boxes for me? Well, box one, relegation battle, right? Leeds United, still not safe. If they can get a point here, or you mean at least, who knows, a win. You mean that has them sitting pretty. Box number two, it's a title race. Man City, you mean, needs to pick up the points here. you know what I mean? And especially last weekend, too, in terms of goal difference, boosted there. So they're closer to Liverpool in terms of goal difference. Box number three, Jesse Marsh. I mean, this is, to me, just an incredible story of how he's thrown in the deep end and how quickly he was able to assimilate and get this team really, I mean, defensively strong, not conceding many goals, but offensively generating the chances and creating the goals. And then I guess box four, let me see, this is the fourth reason I'm trying to think too, is Leeds United, Elland Road. Anyway, one of the most captivating stadiums in England, very similar to Selhurst Park, Crystal Palace, a little bit smaller of a stadium. Elland Road, larger than Selhurst, but the fans from minute 1 to 90 will be standing up, will be cheering, will be waving, will be chanting and singing, no matter what Leeds does in this game. And I'm expecting just a fantastic audio on this one, Kartik, in terms of the crowd noise. Reason number 5, this should be a really entertaining game. I mean, so that's just one example. I guess, like you said too, it goes back to form. We're talking about the games we want to watch this weekend. There's a reason that some of these leagues are more popular than others, and also helps that the title race is still open in Italy and in England. So, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. This week is a little bit different. I want to get your take on this one too. So, it's not finalized yet, but it looks like Twitter has been sold for $44 billion to Elon Musk. Of course, the billionaire who also owns Tesla and SpaceX and the Boring Company, as well as other companies. What's your take on this, Kartik? If this does happen, will everything stay the same? Can we expect many changes? How does this impact soccer in many ways? Because, I mean, it is so intertwined with Twitter, not for all of us, but for a large portion of the hardcore soccer fans.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen kind of a beginning of a gravitation of soccer fans from Twitter to YouTube, which is something I can't get used to, but particularly among U.S. fans, U.S. men's national team fans, although I think they still have a pretty large presence in terms of Twitter. Now, I guess their resentment was about blue check marks, right? These USMNT fans who don't have blue check marks and seem to resent the Alexi Lalases and Stu Holdens and Taylor Twelvins that do, among others, right? They don't, a lot of them don't put the same value on media expertise that people like you and I do. And so they gravitated to YouTube already, a lot of those people, and used Twitter as just a forum to attack the blue check marks, or the quote MLS media, as they call you and me included, Chris, in many cases, even though we're seen by people, a lot of people who support MLS as anti-MLS, which goes back to Elon Musk, right? He says he's against the far right and the far left politically, so maybe he will do something right. I think there'll be changes. There might be changes in the user experience. I don't think it'll be quite as dramatic as people are making it out to be, particularly people on the kind of center left politically are talking about leaving Twitter, whereas I've seen left wing people embracing it because they're free speech advocates, and then people on the right really embracing it. I don't think it'll be a big deal, as big a deal. It might be a big deal, but may not be as big a deal as people think. However, we're taping this Thursday morning, so I have to point this out, Chris. Twitter has a problem with unverified news being amplified. And I fell into it this morning with a very, very important figure everybody on this podcast knows about in football, Mino Raiola, being reported to have... Yes, super agent, agent for Pogba, Ibra, among others, being reported to have died. And I woke up this morning to that news and I put out a bunch of tweets and then analyzed it. You know, what is this going to do to the Pogba's free on this summer and Ibra and et cetera? And it turns out, as of the time of this recording, might change by the time many of you listen, he's actually released a statement. He's not dead. Okay, he is in the hospital. He is in critical condition. Obviously, a publicist put out the statement. But Unverified news on Twitter is probably a bigger issue for Elon Musk to crack down than any of this other stuff that we've heard a lot of hyperbole about. A lot of propaganda, a lot of things that are incorrect and inaccurate that now get amplified by Twitter's algorithm. And that's not a human being controlling that. That's an algorithm. And in this specific case, today, this morning, as we record this, what could have been a massive development in the world of football, because again, he is one of three or four really, really big super agents in Europe in terms of European club football. There are only a handful that are in that top tier, and he's one of them. It turned out not to be true.
I think part of it, though, too, Kartik, this is definitely not just a Twitter problem. This is a Facebook problem. It's social media in general. You look at, even this example of the news, there were verified accounts that were posting that he had passed away. So it's not just that, yes, it's unverified news, but like you said, too, in terms of the algorithm and kind of like where Twitter, you can go to a page on Twitter on your app and it has kind of all the latest news that it believes that you're interested in. So there's an issue there, absolutely. And perhaps maybe Elon Musk has an idea of how to fix this. Maybe he already sees issues with it in terms of the way the platform is and has ideas of how to fix it. One of the things he's looking at fixing is Twitter in terms of just how much money they're making. They have an advertising model. It's always interesting that, we use Twitter. Many of us do. Many of the listeners do, too, I'm sure. But it's one of those things that, you see ads pop up now and again. But Elon Musk is looking at that and saying, okay, well, maybe we'll actually get rid of the advertising model and change it to a subscription model where you may have to pay to be on Twitter or to have certain access levels on Twitter. So there's a whole bunch of, even the verification process part of it too. If you want to be verified and get a blue check, you may have to actually pay for that and go through a kind of a verification process to make sure that you are in fact a human being that does all these
that has some impact, right? Yeah. Look, there's a lot of people, and I'm going to offend some of our listeners here who I'm speaking of specifically. There are a lot of people with blue check marks on Twitter who shouldn't have them. Quite frankly, a lot of people who have a lot less. Chris,
should have them or shouldn't have them.
Should not have them.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who have a lot less influence than you and I do in the soccer world who have gone out and gotten blue check marks. I'm just going to put it there. And we haven't done that because, I personally think the blue check marks belong to the Taylor Twelmans and the Grant Walls and the Simon Evanses and the people who cover this sport professionally for a living and have a certain or writing for certain publications or broadcasting for certain media outlets. It shouldn't be for every Tom, Dick, and Harry. I think Twitter was giving it out like candy at one point. So maybe this is something that he does fix, and you go through an actual verification process. And if it's a real verification process, I might apply for one, right? But I haven't in the past because I've thought it's, I saw some of the people who had blue check marks. I was like, whatever, okay. I don't need that to justify my existence on this platform.
Yeah.
And it's not just in soccer. I see it. I see it in other lines also. I see it in politics too. Some of the people who've gotten blue check marks are okay. They have a social media following, or okay, for 6 months they were a campaign manager for someone, or they wrote for a publication, but they're not of a certain authority that justifies
Kartik,
that.
As in life, oftentimes it comes down to who you know. And if you know the right people or you know the right people within Twitter, you can get things done in terms of blue checks.
I don't know what the process is because I haven't tried, but I know we've had some issues with this with our account at World Soccer Talk. So yeah, you have to handle that. So maybe you have more authority to speak on that.
Yeah, if you want to, we can do a whole Twitter Spaces about that whole thing. I can give you some interesting stories on that. All right, let's move on to the listener mailbag. And first up is John. John says, "What had to be a historic first, ABC, NBC, and CBS aired soccer at the same time last weekend, Bundesliga, Premier League, and NWSL. Your thoughts?" So, Kartik, we've had this happen before, not with these three specific leagues at the same time on over-the-air networks. We've had Fox in there sometimes too, of course. But to me, it's great. I mean, I love it. I mean, I love having soccer as accessible as possible, and whether it's through streaming or even better over the air, and to have major games on all three networks there, except for Fox, at the same time, fantastic, right?
Absolutely. It was great, and I think a big part of what we're seeing also is CBS has really effectively used women's soccer and NWSL as the gateway to test market how soccer does on a broadcast channel. And because it did really well, they've opened the door to showing other things. And obviously, Champions League being on big CBS has made all the difference. I mean, we haven't talked about this yet in this podcast, so I'll use this comment from John as an occasion. Chris, the amount of conversation about Champions League this season exceeds previous seasons because it's on broadcast in the middle of the day on weekdays when there's no other sports on. Now, I did not realize it would have this sort of impact moving these games to CBS. And the numbers have been good, but it seems like in terms of conversation, it's further amplified than even the increase in numbers going from cable to broadcast. It's been pretty massive.
It has, and I think CBS has done it really well in terms of the way that they've set up the whole kind of, I guess, the whole system of how they show games in terms of Paramount Plus having all the games available too, if you want to go down that path, CBS now and again having the games. What's interesting, though, too, actually, for the semi-final UEFA Champions League second legs, I would have presumed that both of those games would have been on CBS. However, they decided to go ahead and have the Real Madrid against Man City second leg on CBS and Paramount Plus. And then the Villarreal against Liverpool second leg only on Paramount Plus. Now, that game is also on Univision and Tuduene. So, I mean, there's so many options, but maybe CBS thought, you know what, Ian, the games looks like it's going to be Liverpool going to kind of cruise in this one. So maybe not have it on CBS. Or maybe they thought they know how many Liverpool supporters there are. They know how many people will be wanting to watch the Villarreal-Liverpool game, even though it looks like Liverpool is almost there in terms of qualifying for the final. And that gravitates a lot of people to watch that game. Liverpool fans or neutral fans wanting to watch that. That's the part of it, Kartik, that's just huge. It's just the number of Liverpool fans that continue to grow in this country. That number seems to just be skyrocketing. And with the potential still, right, of quadruple, which is absolutely insane. I mean, this could be the biggest season ever for Liverpool Football Club in its history, which is absolutely nuts when you think about it. Mercator says, I agree with Kartik. The club channels on TV, they're available around the world. The club channels themselves are often dull because there's no real criticism. Clubs are just not in the position to truly criticize themselves or their players. So you end up with dull or very biased presentation that makes you feel like you're watching propaganda and not soccer. But they can be great if you follow the youth team levels. And I would agree too, from my own personal Swansea City TV, seeing some of those youth games, kind of U23 games or other types of games that I've seen in the past, that those have been great. And actually, they've been pretty, I mean, they're not overly critical when my team loses, but you mean it's not, they're not in the tank 100%. It's not like it. I mean, at least from what I watch on mine. What about Man City TV, Kartik? Are they in the tank completely, or are they a little bit?
Yes. Okay.
Oh well,
I don't watch them. You know, I the club was very different at one point. I mean, I this was before the takeover, but I used to listen when early days of podcasting. Every week there'd be a podcast with Andy Hinchcliffe, who's another. I listed a bunch of players the other day that had played for both Everton and played for both Everton and Manchester City, saying that hey, there are ties that bind us. There's a reason why I have such a fondness for Everton history, being a City fan. Hinchcliffe is another. But there used to be a podcast a club would put out with Andy Hinchcliffe every week, and there would be occasional other former City legends on it that was very unbiased in the days when City was struggling, quite frankly. After the takeover, things became more propaganda-ish. Things became more about City Football Group. Now there's a lot of City TV, which is about these other clubs that City has invested in around the globe, which I just have to laugh because I had someone who's a family member ask me about Mumbai City Football Club and MCFC and their Etihad sponsorship just last week, right? And it's just like, well, you know, I'm very uncomfortable with all of this, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you support the club, you don't support the brand, right?
Right, but there are a lot of City fans who I think are watching City TV or whatever who support New York City FC and Mumbai City FC and Troyes and Hirona and Melbourne City FC. It's another one that's MCFC, right? To me, it's very weird. But City TV, to your point, Club TV channel has really pushed that. And successfully with a lot of City fans.
Adolfo says, my comments on the dominance of the Premier League in the United States, I feel it comes down to some very important factors. NBC really only has the Premier League and NFL as sports properties, and the NFL is shared with other broadcasters, whereas the Premier League is theirs entirely in the United States. Second factor is I never saw a big audience for La Liga or the Bundesliga. It's always two to three teams in contention, and unlike the Premier League, no one cares about the relegation battle in other leagues. Lastly, the third and most important factor to why other leagues do not resonate with audiences in the US is NFL and college football. Every league, even the Premier League, will always be second to both sports. And be it ESPN, Fox, or if one day NBC wins either the Sunday afternoon AFC, NFC package, the Premier League will also be second in that sports portfolio. And I think second is quite okay. I think nobody kind of expects soccer to get bigger or more popular than American football in our lifetimes. I mean, really, it's not going to happen. Roberto says, the Open Cup has long been a favorite of mine. Thanks for your comments in the podcast. Lamar Hunt helped save the MLS in its formative years. The old NASL did not take part. They were afraid of upsets. This year it is back, and there have been some fun games. Some MLS teams did not take it seriously and deserve the embarrassment of defeat. I'm halfway between Charlotte and Greenville, South Carolina. The B team almost got beat by a team two divisions lower. It was good for Greenville, who are planning a new 8,000-seat stadium. In the coming rounds, there may be more upsets. In the past, USL teams have made the last rounds. For me, this cup is more important than the contrived League's Cup. Dave says, I'm really enjoying the US Open Cup to the point I skipped some Liga MX action to focus on small stadiums and teams. Bummed that this may be the last year to stream. I know MLS does not field A teams for these games, but lower leagues are close to MLS in quality in games I've watched. Referees, announcers, and keepers are much better than I expected. And it's probably, I mean, it's part of the reason, right, Kartik? What you mean? So, yeah, MLS is playing their season at the same time as US Open Cup. But in some ways, you mean, and they have large squads, MLS, but in some ways, MLS probably feels that, you mean, why give the US Open Cup the kind of spotlight when it's not a MLS Soccer United marketing property? And sometimes it can actually make MLS look inferior. Well, if not inferior, at least on the same level as USL.
Yeah, I had that experience with working in NASL, where there were several occasions where MLS and US Soccer were not cooperative about us amplifying the one-off matchups that our teams had with MLS sides, like when Minnesota is now in MLS, ironically enough, but Minnesota played Real Salt Lake, and Carolina, which is now North Carolina FC, played the LA Galaxy several successive years. So that was something that we didn't get much cooperation on, and I think that was the reason they were concerned about the upsets. At the same time, I have to say MLS has promoted it a little more this year, maybe from pressure from the U.S. soccer, because U.S. soccer has clearly, as Roberto mentions in his comment, and Dave, that there's been better announcers and production level along the streaming this year than in past years. And I know U.S. soccer, under the commissioner, Mr. Applegate, have made a real effort to promote this competition this season, building up into it being a full-fledged U.S. soccer property in terms of media and marketing and sponsorship in 2023, as we've talked about it, as part of potentially the Turner deal. So there has been a ramping up of the way U.S. soccer treats this competition this year. Obviously, they haven't held it the last 2 years because of COVID, so it's the first one since 2019. MLS has seen some pressure, I think. They've done more on social media, at least, to promote the Open Cup, which they in the past they would act like these games didn't exist and these were like reserve matches or friendlies with lower division teams. At least this year, there's a little bit more emphasis on the cup from MLS's marketing department, but maybe that's due to pressure from U.S. Soccer, who are seeing the cup now as a more valuable property, more important property than they previously saw it.
So two more pieces to go in a listener mailbag. Next is Martin. Martin says, since ESPN may lose MLS, do you think they will use some of their broadcast talent to air Bundesliga 2 games that they have the rights to? They're showing more Bundesliga 2 games recently, but not sure if ESPN uses MLS contracted talent for the games or their own. So, Martin, sorry to rain on your parade here, but it's unlikely that ESPN will lose the rights to MLS. If anything, it's more likely that they will renew, at least in some, you mean, who knows what yet in terms of what that's going to be. And it's unlikely, too, I think, that we'll see more Bundesliga 2 games on. I mean, again, ESPN will show as many games as they can that they have talent for, and that would be their own talent in-house. So these games, the Bundesliga 2 games, have no commentary available to them. They just get the actual live feed of the game, so they have to ESPN has to use their own commentators. So, and again, too, with the Bundesliga 2, it's getting towards the end of the season. The playoffs will be here before you know it in terms of those teams trying to get up into the Bundesliga and the kind of that relegation playoff from the Bundesliga to Bundesliga 2. So, yeah, unlikely, unfortunately. But if it does happen where ESPN loses out on MLS, then then we should see a few more games. Not a lot. I don't think there's a lot of demand quite yet, although it's a great league to watch. Last but not least, JP says, regional sports networks are the stand-in for team channels, but since many are actually owned, for example, the Red Sox owns NESN, Yankees own the YES Network, etc., The Dolan family, who owns the Knicks and Rangers, also owns MSG. It's the same thing. Right now, fans of any local baseball, basketball, or hockey team need access to a specific regional sports network in order to watch the majority of regular season games. This will cost close to $200 a month or more when you include the usual cable, internet, phone bundle. It does make you less aware of the league and players as a whole, unless you also subscribe to the out-of-market package, MLB TV, NBA League Pass, etc., or are heavily into gambling, fantasy, and follow the league that way as well. And Kartik, before we go here, I mean, that's still the biggest pickle that MLS has to deal with, is figuring out how do they operate and go forward in their TV streaming media rights deal with regional sports networks. And part of it, too, is that MLS said, hey, we're combining these rights together. So, hey, if ESPN, if you want to go ahead and get the rights to these games, the national rights, but also the local rights to these games, too, you guys decide how you want to do that. If you want to have it available to everyone through a streaming package, or if you want to go ahead in certain cities, have those regional rights, too. it's an issue. It's a big issue, so especially from the production point of view too, is if MLS says, hey, we're going to skip that whole regional side, we're just going to go national and streaming. Like, well, who's going to be actually broadcasting those games? Because
yeah, and I think they're complicating things with this, right? And we talked about the production side of this before, and having to take into production. As we just got done discussing U.S. Open Cup, right? U.S. Soccer has made the decision to produce all those games, which they didn't used to do. I can attest to that personally. That used to be a real hassle at clubs and leagues I've worked at, is broadcasting those Open Cup games. I mean, in fact, there one time when I was working in an amateur club or consulting for an amateur club, I had to struggle to get the game on air, a U.S. Open Cup match, and find announcers to call the match, and had to do that all on my own. Now U.S. Soccer is taking care of that. That is a major expense and a major hassle that MLS has, you know, effectively through the years either dumped off on their individual clubs or to these networks, as you're outlining, these RSNs, JP. So I don't know. I think that this is another complication. You know, we're hearing here at World Soccer Talk that a deal might be close with a network or with a media partner, but these are all complications. This is why I don't think it got done in the first quarter and probably isn't getting done in the first month of the second quarter either. It's going to be May when it gets done, it looks like.
All right, Kartik, so if any listeners want to share any feedback, any questions you have in terms of you mean anything that we've covered today or anything in regards to watching soccer on TV, streaming or apps, etc., definitely get in touch with us. You can reach us through email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com, Facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, Twitter, our handle is @worldsoccertalk, or on the website, on the podcast. You can go ahead and on the podcast feed there. The actual stream, you can go ahead and post your comments there, and we'll gladly read those out on a future episode. So on behalf of everyone at worldsoccertalk.com, thank you for listening. And Kartik, heading into another weekend, right? I mean, you've got your Serie A game to look forward to, as well as much more. I mean, so many much games to look forward to. We're spoilt for choice. I'm looking forward to watching Leeds against Man City. Also, kind of not looking forward to watching Swansea against Nottingham Forest, but I am interested in the Championship playoffs too.
We know Swansea at some point will lead in that match, maybe by multiple goals. Sorry, Chris. I mean, it's yeah, they've been blowing leads. They'd be right in this playoff mix if they hadn't blown several multiple goal leads.
Oh God. Anyway, thank you for listening. And Kartik, what should you do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.